the Sisters Minor of Mary Immaculate, founded by Mother Maria Elisabetta Patrizi, August 14, 1983. There have been allegations of abuse within the convent walls. Former members of the SMMI allege that they faced physical, emotional abuse, strict rules, food restrictions, and they have likened their experience to that of a cult. These are their stories, in their words. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult of SMMI. I am your host, Scott Mort. I hope you're having a wonderful week. I just got off the phone not too long ago, less than an hour ago, with Mike Kovacs. So where the podcast starts in a couple of weeks is going to be where it continues. We had a long interview of about an hour and a half, 2 hours. I learned a lot about what went on with the SMMI from his perspective. Former member of the SMMI, Patricia Budd, wanted me to mention this. She said, "I forgot to mention there was racism. A sister who is African American, Sister Virginia, was called a black dog by Sister Stella Marie." So there was racism within the SMMI as well. Now, I need to get a bit of legalese out of the way, and I do apologize for this, but the views and experiences expressed by our podcast guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host or the podcast network. While we strive to provide a platform for diverse perspectives and engaging conversations, it is important to note that the experiences shared by our guests cannot be independently verified. Listeners should exercise critical thinking and consider these stories as personal anecdotes rather than established facts. There is no way to definitively refute or verify the claims made by our guests. The hosts and the podcast network are not responsible for any statements made by the guests during the course of the show. Listeners are engaged to form their own judgments and seek additional information if desired. With that out of the way, Georgiana.
I don't know if it was a kickback situation. I don't know if it was, I could never figure that part out, but I know she had some kind of, real deep connection with the dark side of our Mother General. And because they would agree on all of these wholly irreverent things that I was astounded that it would just keep going that way. And some of those superiors on the, in the country of Italy, they were all trained that way. It was like, this is how you're going to do it. And I was like, wow, okay. I couldn't figure out why that was part of being a superior. But going back to the year that I was supposed to be superior in Trumbull, I couldn't be that kind of person. And I thought, you know what, this is why they never wanted me to be a superior, because I was going to try to do it the right way. That was what happened with Sister Christina when she took over after Mother stepped down at the 25th anniversary. I remember sitting in the chapel while Mother gave this big speech about how she formed Sister Christina, and she was going to give her the whole responsibility But she would always be there for her. And I sat there and I laughed. I'm like, that's not going to happen. And the sisters around me, like, you can't say that about mother. I'm like, no. This is pure theater. You know the superiors you've had. You've seen how mother, you know, carries herself and the things she gets away with. And they're like, well, you don't know that. But sure enough, as soon as Sister Christina was made Superior General, she started to change things. And as soon as she did that, Patrizi defamed her throughout all of Rome. And the poor woman, who was already in poor health because of how mother treated her, she just couldn't take it. And she just like, well, I'll just be a regular sister. Well, that didn't work either. Because, well, if you're supposed to be a regular sister, who's going to take over? Well, at that time, it was the superior I had while I was in Rome. Well, mother went after her, and she immediately went home and stayed with her parents. She didn't want part of it. Because the superiors weren't used to being reined in. They were basically able to do whatever they wanted. Now, the most critical thing that I didn't really embrace or understand, because I wasn't allowed to understand it, because I wasn't allowed to read Vatican law documents. But anytime a superior asked you to do anything morally questionable or something you knew for a fact was illegal, you had no obligation to obey, no obligation whatsoever. In fact, that was a renunciation of their being a superior in that moment. You couldn't ask somebody to do those things. And yet, it constantly happened in the United States, in Italy, and most of the other countries where the sisters were. So everybody had a bad taste about our sisters after a certain point, because they saw how people were treated who were trying to do the right thing. It was an amazing experience in the sense of I made it out alive.
Have you ever heard any stories about how Teresa Kovacs met Mother Patrizi? Because I'm curious about how that dynamic started.
I believe Sister Teresa was working the YMI, which is the Youth Mission of the Immaculate. And Mother General came over to the United States on some kind of, I don't know, she said she had some spiritual moment, some aha epiphany that said you should go to the United States and, you know, there'll be sisters there for you. This was the story she told us. And that first encounter here in the United States, she met Sister Teresa, Sister Dolores, Sister Carolyn, and I want to think a couple others. Or maybe they came later. Sister Mary Elizabeth, Sister Amanda, Sister Antonia. There were a number that came over, but Sister Teresa, Sister Dolores, and Sister Carolyn were among the first, and it all had to do with the YMI, because it was a Franciscan retreat, and Mother was all about the Franciscan spirituality, because our sisters were considered part of the Franciscan family. So I think it started there. I think they found whatever it was in each other that said, you know, let's do this. And they did. They just went forward with whatever they wanted under the guise of you know, being a superior. The interesting thing is the congregation itself being accepted and raised to a state of recognition in the church that was recognized by the Vatican, and it was officially an international order. God had a plan for the order, but as Michael has said, as Patricia has said, there was something always dark and evil that would pervade everything that was going on. And it was usually taken out on the sisters of lower rank because, well, anything bad that could happen was because we were sinful. Not because they were being sinful, not because they were not doing what the church asked them to do as superiors, but it was our problem. And then we'd get punished because I wasn't the only one that had their lumps throughout the years. There were others, and I'm sure eventually you will come to find more who were put through physical ordeals and a lot of mental, torture. I mean, the whole breaking down picture was a part of all of our lives. There were a chosen few, I can think of like maybe three, who weren't torn down like the rest of us. And it always fascinated me. I'm like, what? How are these people skating by? Why? How are they not being put through what the rest of us are going through? But then I kind of flipped it around in my mind thinking, well, thank God they don't have to suffer all of this. Maybe they have a suffering I don't understand or see. Most of the suffering that the rest of us had, other people did witness, whether it was visual or they heard it through the wall in the next room, or they got the story recounted by somebody else who had actually seen it. That happened all of the time in every country we were in. And it was, for me, it was like, it was an embarrassment. I'm like, I don't quite understand why we're not living up to what we've been called to.
The most horrifying aspect of your story, and I've heard it from other people too, was the cancer patient, sister who had cancer. I think it's a thing for me. My mother passed away of cancer. I've had several cousins pass away, and just knowing that pain, to me, it's not a godly thing. Godly thing to go, oh, look, this suffering, you know, this is how you handle suffering. If you are a Christian, in my opinion, you look at somebody who's suffering, you do everything to ease that because Jesus went through that for us, not as an example, but so that we wouldn't have to. And was that, what I'm asking is, was that a one and done occurrence, or were, like, after it happened or before it happened, were there like whispers of like, yeah, this is just like such and such a time, or, you know, this other sister, you know, she was not given palliative care 5 or 6 years ago or what have you?
Well, there was one sister, I kind of alluded to her as someone who was sick and left. She was supposed to have been a mother vicar early on. In fact, this sister, whose name escapes me at this point, was in that group with Sister Teresa, Sister Dolores, and Sister Carolyn. and was one of those forever superiors. And she had gotten very ill, and we had sent, you know, her to, as a community, up to the Three Rivers House in Massachusetts, because that was where the one and only doctor anybody in the Americas could go to see. Because Mother had to vet a doctor for you to be able to be treated by them. So this sister got some care, but she saw and she knew, because she knew that the people, anybody who suffered, well, they just basically suffered until they either left or it got so obnoxious for Mother that she finally decided to take care of whatever it was. But this sister, knowing that, she just left. She went and was in another community's infirmary until she passed away. But she knew. She knew clearly that staying was a death sentence for her. And I looked at that situation and I thought, wow, I hope I don't get sick. And it was right after that that I got the cancer and almost died. Mm. In fact, the tumors that I had, one was the size of an overstuffed football and the other one was the size of a softball. And they were pushing against all of my organs and had me in tremendous pain constantly. And I remember asking Sister Carolyn, I said, is there anything I can do for this pain? And she's like, oh, you're such a baby. I guess I'll give you 2 aspirin. Now, can you imagine giving somebody aspirin for cancer? I laughed at the whole thing, but it was, they were cruel.
Now, were you part of the sisterhood whenever Patrizia got sick? Or passed away?
I was not there when she passed away. But Mother General had lupus. So she would have flare-ups of the lupus and end up in the hospital. And she'd be in the hospital, like Gemelli there in Rome, for a week, 2 weeks, sometimes a month. But, you know, she always got care. She always had medicine. And there was never a moment when she didn't get all the care she needed.
I was honestly kind of curious as to how, and I don't know if you'd heard anything about this from other members. How did Sister, if you know, if you don't know, that's fine. But how did Sister Teresa Kovacs, how did she behave whenever Mother Patrizia passed?
When she died or when she was in town?
Whenever she passed away, whenever she died.
Actually, it was only recently that she passed. It was, I want to say, maybe 4 years ago.
Okay.
And I had already been out 10 years by that time. But I know that, I think Sister Teresa felt she had no life net, you know, nothing under her to keep her from falling, you know, to keep her going. And so she perpetuated the ideology of what a sister was supposed to do or look like, because she's, as far as I know, she's still wearing a habit. And she's not a sister, because our community was completely disbanded by the Vatican. The ones that remained that just wanted to still serve God, the church, they're taking care of those that stayed in Rome. But the rest of us, all the Americans, we just scattered, went wherever. It was as if, you know, once you were outside the door, nobody really cared. And it was only because of Facebook that a lot of us really kind of reconnected.
Thank you. thank you for joining us once again here on the Cult of SMMI. If you or a family member or a friend were a member of the SMMI and would like to come on and refute or verify the claims of any of our guests, please reach out to me, strangepathwaysmail@gmail.com. Once again, I thank you so much for joining us here this week. The numbers have been high, and it does my heart good to see the stories that these victims put out there being heard, finally being heard. And it does me good. I hope it does you good as well. Take care of yourselves and each other.